1430 ESPN. This is the Central Valley Sports Report, and I am your host, Paul Metters, live here at First String Sports. First String Sports is definitely the place to be. This fine, a little bit cloudy, right? A little bit cloudy out there this fine Saturday morning, September 2nd, the year of our Lord, 2023. You know where First String Sports is. This is the one and only place where I've done my show. This is year number three. They've been an incredible sponsor, an incredible supporter of high school sports. I do my show in the Letterman's Jacket Room, right off to the right-hand side when you walk into the store. We got the ESPN Radio 1430 sign behind me, the First String Sports sign behind me. Letterman's Jacket is to my left, to my right, looking at Kingsburg, Kermit, Bullard, Woodlake, Selma, Buchanan, Clovis West. It's the only place you get your Letterman's Jacket. I come here around 9 o'clock in the morning, get everything set up for the 10 o'clock show, and there were people already in here getting their Letterman's Jackets designed, getting some Bible verses on. It was really neat to see a couple student-athletes get dressed in their colors, their school colors, supporting their schools. All right, so for the next 2 hours, what do we got going on? Well, high school sports, and more high school sports. 2 hours of pure high school talk, positive vibes only here on 1430 ESPN. We want to thank Lee's Air Plumbing and Heating for sponsoring the show as well, for sponsoring all the shows on 1430 ESPN. I mentioned it's cloudy out there. I woke up and got my car and drove over here to First String Sports. And, yeah, it's cloudy and a tiny bit muggy. So right now we're looking at 71 degrees with a high of 86 on this Labor Day weekend. So thanks to Lee's Air Plumbing and Heating. You can follow me on Twitter at Paul Metters, PaulMeadors, and also at 1430 ESPN. I guess it's not Twitter anymore, right? It's X. But it will always be Twitter to me. I don't know if I'll ever call it X. It's Twitter. Follow us on Twitter. Report high school scores from last night and throughout the week. If we get information, we tweet that out and let everybody know what's going on here in the Central Valley. All right, what's going on today on the show? Well, it's a loaded show. We got a lot of really, really good guests lined up for today, talking about the great games from last night. I'm going to be going over the scores as well. After the break, I start a new segment this year called Beyond the Game, where I focus on something that happens beyond the game, a feel-good story, maybe a show of sportsmanship, or maybe we're highlighting a kid that's gone through some adversity. So after the break, I got something really, really cool that I saw in last night's Clovis West and Lemoore game that I'm excited to share with you guys. Also be talking with Gabe Camarillo. Gabe is my right-hand man, along with Jose Gonzalez. Gabe's got that incredible show, Home Field Advantage, and Gabe and I have been to a couple games the last 2 days. We're going to be chopping that up and much, much more after the break. After that break, just before hour number two, Shafter head coach Gerald Perucci is coming on. Why is a Shafter coach coming on? Well, if you're tuned into high school sports, Shafter's caught your attention. I'm sure of that. And they won the Central Section Championship last year with that great run all the way to the state championship. And, Perucci actually went viral with one of his videos before the state championship, or after the state championship game last year, that they lost. The field conditions were awful, muddy. Guys were slipping, couldn't even grip the ball. So he went viral with the video. We might get to that. But last night, Shafter beat Bakersfield. Yes, the Drillers, that Bakersfield, the historic Bakersfield Drillers. They beat them 31-17 a few years ago. I mean, would that have even been in the conversation, let alone playing each other? But Shafter beat Bakersfield. So looking forward to talking to Coach Perucci. And hour number two, we've got an audible, but it's a good audible. Coach Brandon Ago of Clovis East was scheduled to come on, but he texted me this morning and says, hey, my kid's sick, not able to make it. I said, absolutely no problem. Family first, always. So he's like, what if I send Ty Miller and Harold Duvall? I'm like, of course, send those two dudes. So we're going to be talking with them at the top of hour number two. Stud quarterback, talking about Ty Miller, Harold Duvall, standout wide receivers. They have torn it up this year as the Timberwolves have gone 3-0. They just had some remarkable plays against Sanger in that win on Thursday night. So those are a couple dudes. So hour number two, top of hour number two, we're going to be talking with Ty Miller and Harold Duvall of Clovis East. And then one of my favorites, Coach Eric Brown from Clovis West, bottom of hour number two. And I chatted with him a little bit this morning for about 5 minutes. And let me just say, he is still breathing a sigh of relief after last night's one-point win over Lemoore. A game that, man, I got to be honest, Lemoore had it. Clovis West stopped him on a fourth down in the fourth quarter. Clovis West wasn't able to score. And then a fumble. Lemoore fumbled it. And Clovis West drove down the field and scored on a game-winning touchdown run with about 25 seconds left in that one. But always fun to talk to Coach Eric Brown, and he's definitely relieved to skate Veterans Memorial Stadium with the win over Lemoore. All right, this is the time of the show where I go over scores, and if I know a little bit of details about each game, I'll throw those in as well. So here are some scores. There were some games Thursday, like I mentioned, that Clovis East 42-21 win over Sanger at LaMonica Stadium. We'll obviously get into that more as the show goes on. Golden Valley of Bakersfield defeated South 28-20. Kennedy comes back after a loss last week and defeated Highland 34-15. McFarland defeated Granite Hills 19-0. Porterville, they got a really strong team this year. They shut out Foothill Bakersfield 44-0. What's going on with Bakersfield schools, to be honest? That's going to be a time for another discussion on that one, because there's some strange things going on in Bakersfield in regards to football. Stockdale defeated Red Ridgeview 21-13. Tranquility defeated Farmersville 22-7, and Orosi defeated Big Valley Christian 48-7. All right, so last night, here are a few scores of note. Carruthers defeated Fireball 46-18. Blue Raiders were 0-2. Actually, they were down in this one early to Fireball and just storms back and defeats the Eagles. Centennial Bakersfield, really good ball club, really good quarterback, and a good wide receiver, defeated Independence 42-21. And Central Valley Christian, those Cavaliers just keep winning. They defeated Bakersfield Christian 56-25. Congratulations to Coach Mason Hughes. He won his 100th game a couple games ago. Bryson Donaldson, he is the best running back in the Central section. I'm sure he had a monster game in that win. And that sets up a huge game. And Gabe and I will talk about this game a little bit. Central Valley Christian and Clovis North in Visalia next week, a huge one. And speaking of Clovis North, they ran roughshod all over El Diamante, 55-0. That game was a running clock. And then the game that we're going to be talking a lot about, as well as the day goes through, Clovis West defeated Lemoore 27-26. Kalinga defeated Selma 46-0. Corcoran defeated Hanford West, low scoring game, 14-0. Delano beat North of Bakersfield 14-12. Dos Palos, in one of the games that we had earmarked, defeated Liberty Madera 29-22. Look at them Broncos. They're off to a really good start. Liberty, a strong team as well. Exeter defeated Lindsay 17-14. Frontier Bakersfield defeated Bullard 24-17 at McLean Stadium. Frontier is a top 10 team in the Central section. Justin Garza High School all over Sanger West 48-14. Hanford defeated Golden West 40-22. Emmanuel Reedley, Fowler 35-12. Fowler's 0-3. Emmanuel gets their first win of the season. And Kerman, congrats to Damon Jenkins, beating Madera 28-22. A couple really good programs and coaches there. And Kingsburg defeated Dinuba 42-14. That was 14-7 Dinuba early, and Kingsburg just stormed out. It's too much firepower. A couple pick sixes, interception return, 105. Interception return for Chris Brow in that one. Max Warkentine threw three touchdowns. So Dave Wilson and the Kingsburg Vikings moved to 3-0 on the season. Mendota shut out Strathmore 20-0. Mission Oak defeated Roosevelt 31-7. Orange Cove defeated Parlier 45-0. Redwood defeated Tulare Union, high scoring game, 42-35. All right, a little comparative score, right? Tulare Union, actually Kings are going to be playing them this year. Redwood scored 42. They had that really good game against Clovis North last week where they held them to 21 points. It was actually 7-6 game. Redwood was Braidwood was right in that one last week against Clovis North, but they come out with a win against Tulare Union. Shafter and Bakersfield, we're going to be talking with Coach Gerald Perucci later in the hour. Defeated Bakersfield 31-17. Sierra Pacific defeated Woodlake 29-22. Tulare Western defeated Mount Whitney 36-21. Washington Union beat Taurus, shut them out actually, 25-0. Central of Fresno had to come back in this one to defeat Turlock 21-18. They were down 18-7 at half. Earl Riley threw a touchdown pass to get within a touchdown, and then they closed it out with a win. So, yeah, kind of a frustrating game for Central. They just struggled. They had a few turnovers and led to a Turlock touchdown early in that one. But hey, a win's a win. Clovis defeated Whitney of Rockland 41-28. Garces lost to Moore Park 41-35. And Buchanan went down in Rockland 42-20. San Joaquin Memorial, yeah, they added a game earlier this week. Capital Christian in Sacramento, they beat them 38-14. And our number one team in the Central Section, two-time defending state champ Liberty, they lost at home. But who they lost to is a state power. Santa Margarita came in and beat them 34-14. Gabe and I might mention this, but do we knock Liberty off the number one spot in our rankings? I don't know. Do we move Clovis East up? Do we move Clovis North up? I don't know. I think I might still have to keep Liberty at number one. I'll have to think about it a little bit more. And one more score of note, St. Joseph of Santa Maria, a really good team, beat Newberry Park 63-52. All right, there is a little breakdown of the game. We'll be breaking those games down in detail more as the show goes on. A couple things I want to mention. Obviously, the NFL is going on. Coming up on September 11th, our guy Josh Allen from Fireball playing the New York Jets. That's going to be a really, really interesting game. We'll see how Josh does against the new look New York Jets and Aaron Rodgers. I want to mention Adam Prentice. Adam Prentice made the 53-man roster for the New Orleans Saints. Adam Prentice, a Clovis grad, played at Colorado State last year at South Carolina, undrafted, and made the 53-man roster as a fullback. So congrats, Adam. Just a great guy, comes from a great family. And then, of course, some of our high school studs here up. Now, I'm going to name three guys really quick to keep an eye on this college football season. And one, he shined on Thursday night, Nate Johnson from Clovis High. Actually a freshman. He got his redshirt year last year, scored on that 27-yard touchdown run in Utah's 24-11 win over Florida. Kendall Milton, two-time defending champ, running back from Buchanan at University of Georgia. He is expected to be the dude this year. So looking forward to watching Kendall. And then Xavier Worthy of Texas, preseason All-American in a few polls. That guy is a dude from Central High. DJ Schramm, I know he plays for Boise State. I know he's Fresno State's rival from Clovis West. He is an all-conference player for Boise State from Clovis West. So keep an eye on some of those guys. Always fun to mention those guys when we get a chance. All right, coming up after the break, we're talking with Gabe Camarillo and my segment on Beyond the Game on 1430 ESPN. Thank you guys for listening. I'm your host, Paul Metters, here at First String Sports. This is the Central Valley Sports Report on 1430 ESPN. Maybe you're driving around on this Labor Day weekend in your car, going to the hardware store, picking something up, doing a project. I'm going to Sacramento when the show's over. I have a fantasy draft with my brother-in-law. Fantasy football, right? Tis the season for fantasy football. I don't know. I got to be honest, right? I've been doing fantasy sports since the mid-90s. I think I'm at a point where I'm a little bit of a burnout with fantasy football. I know how popular it is. I know there's shows and billion-dollar business out there. But I got to be honest, a little bit of a fantasy football fatigue moment right now. This is the least amount I've studied for my fantasy draft ever. I'm just going to have to go off the list. But, hey, there's a lot of important things to talk about, and a lot of important things to occupy my time with, and fantasy football has kind of gone to the bottom of the list a little bit. But, hey, flip it with high school sports, man. High school sports is, I mean, I have a passion for it. I love it. I mean, the last Thursday, Friday nights have just been a joy to watch games. And there was something that I noticed in last night's Clovis West and Lemoore game that I wanted to point out. It was a hard-fought game. It was a hard-fought game. There was a lot of play in the trenches. A lot of hard hits, a lot of big plays. There were three kickoff returns for touchdowns combined for both teams. Lemoore came in and they did not back down. I was really impressed with how Lemoore played defense, especially their DBs, their secondary did not back down at all. They took it to the challenge of those Division I receivers that Clovis West has. But I want to point out linebacker for Clovis West, Titus Kajabi. He's headed to Fresno State, committed to Fresno State. He's a three-year varsity guy. I've watched him for the last 3 years. He had some monster hits in that game. And like I said, it was a very physical game, very physical. And Clovis West came back, scored that last touchdown, and Lemoore doesn't have that big strike offense that they had last year. More of a running team. So they have 25 seconds. I believe the ball is around the 17-yard line and down a point. And so Lemoore pretty much had, you know, a very, very slim chance to come back and win that game. So the quarterback, John Cunha, ran out the last play and was tackled by Kajabi. And it was a good tackle, good form-fitting tackle. And you know, after the game, Clovis West is celebrating like they should. They came back. It was a really good game. And Kajabi could have very easily just jumped up and started celebrating and, you know, chest bumped his guys and his coaches and been whooping it up. But what did he do? He stayed down on the field and made sure that number one for Lemoore was okay. Made sure that he got up. He helped him up, gave him a little side hug, and then he went and celebrated with his team. I thought that was really, really cool of Kajabi. Again, he could have just whooped it up and stood over him a little bit, says, yeah, this is our game. But no, the senior's like, you know what? I know how hard football is. I know how hard this kid played. I'm going to show him respect and pick him up. So hats off to Clovis West, Titus Kajabi. That was a really, really cool moment. Before we get to Gabe here, I got a couple stats here. Bryson Donaldson, I texted Coach Mason Hughes. He had 10 carries for 193 yards and three more touchdowns against Bakersfield Christian. So, man, that dude, I mean, going to have to add those stats with his other games, but I think he's averaging like 20 yards a carry. Well, it was basically 19.3 yards per carry last night. So what an incredible run this kid has had. Fresno State's offered him, Boise State's offered him. So Bryson Donaldson, almost 200 yards last night. All right, Gabe Camarillo, you know him from Home Field Advantage. He's part of the pregame, a halftime show, and the postgame show with me on 1430 ESPN. We're checking out Clovis West and Lemoore game last night. Gabe, I think you're at the producing the show at home base, watching that Fresno State game, keeping a keen eye on that game, right?
Specifically, keen eye. Yes, I'm keeping an eye on Keen, Mikey Keen, and man, he's playing well. Man, I'm excited for this guy. I'm excited to see what he can do over the next 3 years here at Fresno State.
Yeah, 21-14. Looks like just before halftime, Fresno State is down to Purdue. I mentioned that. You know, the Titus Kajabi, I was just really impressed by that. He had a really big game. But, man, Gabe, how do you quantify that game? We're going to be talking with Coach Eric Brown, but that was a game that Lemoore had. And we talked about it in the post game. We saw Lemoore and at around the 10-yard line after the game. They looked dejected. They were, you know, talking about the game, I'm sure. Their heads were hanging low. But, man, those guys came to play, didn't they?
Lemoore impressed me with how they came in fearless. You know, sometimes you come into a Veterans Memorial Stadium and just the size of the stadium, the history of that field, the aura of being the road team facing a Clovis school sometimes can overwhelm you. It did not do that for Lemoore. They came in fearless, fully expecting from the opening kickoff that they were going to win the game. And I would not have blamed them if after the opening kickoff, they felt, okay, this team is too athletic to face, because Clovis West returned that opening kickoff, what was it, 90 yards from Landon Wright for a touchdown. Even after suffering that initial blow, Lemoore was not deterred. It kind of reminded me of how like a Fresno State would go to a USC and give USC a battle, kind of like in 2005 when Fresno State almost beat the Trojans. That's what it felt like last night. It felt like on social media, people were pulling for Lemoore, the Fresno State in this situation, to beat the powerhouse Clovis West Golden Eagles. I mean, everyone here in the Valley knows the talent that Clovis West has. It's easy to root for Clovis West if you're a Clovis West fan or parent or coach or part of that community, but I felt like everyone outside Clovis West last night was kind of pulling for Lemoore to pull off the upset because it's fun to root for the little guy.
Yeah, and you asked me the question in the postgame, when did you think that Clovis West might win this game? And I said, well, not until the clock was 0-0-0, because that game was as topsy-turvy as it gets. The kickoff return from Kobe Green was absolutely phenomenal. I had that place rocking. He also had two interceptions. But what about that kid, Kobe Green? What an athlete.
He was part of last year's Division II section championship team. And that's kind of why I thought this game against Clovis West maybe would have been a Golden Eagles win running away in the second half, because Clovis West has a lot coming back from last year, and that team beat Lemoore 40-14, and Lemoore does not have much coming back from that offense last year. Ty Chambers now playing junior college football, Demel Turner playing at Cal Poly, just so many big parts of that team last year for Lemoore graduated. I thought maybe this would have been a rebuilding year for Lemoore, but look at their first three games. They beat Selma 48-0. They beat Washington Union 46-0. And that Washington Union team just beat Torres last night in a shutout fashion. And then they hang with Clovis West and lose with just 25 seconds to go. This Lemoore team could easily be another Division II section champion.
Yeah, absolutely. And then on the flip side for Clovis West, after that opening kickoff, I thought, oh, man, this could be one of those big Clovis West wins. But like we were talking about, Lemoore held strong. Clovis West rotating quarterbacks a little bit. I'm going to be talking with Coach Eric Brown about that. But, yeah, what Clovis West defense, right, Gabe? We pointed them out. We felt like that was the key to the Clovis West wins, that defensive line.
Yeah, Clovis West, 9 tackles for loss and 3 sacks. Actually, I think 4 sacks. That was, I think, what kept Clovis West in the game when the offense wasn't finding a groove. And we can talk about the offense if we want, but I really want to focus on what won the game for Clovis West. That defense, and then the game-winning touchdown drive that Tyler Patrick led. A big third-down conversion on 3rd-and-14 to Marshall Sanders set up another big pass at Titus Kajabi, which set up Lonnie Frank's touchdown run. So big plays made on that final drive, I guess. What did Santana Moss say with Miami about 2 decades ago? Big-time players make big-time plays in big games. Hey, I didn't expect that to be a big game for Clovis West, but it turned out being that, because if Clovis West loses last night, it could have been devastating for the team. I mean, think about the confidence that you lose if you lose to a Lemoore, a team that you beat by several touchdowns last year. I felt like that quickly turned into a must-win game for Clovis West because, as you said, Paul, it looked like that was in doubt until the very end.
No, absolutely. And Tyler Patrick, he threw 3 interceptions in that game. But talk about that last drive from your perspective, what you saw. I know you were down on the field for that one. But, right, he very easily could have hung his head. And he came back senior. This was his game to win or lose, so to speak. And he made the plays, right? He made 3 clutch throws, and the Golden Eagles came out on top.
I'm thinking about what this means for Clovis West long-term, too. And winning this game is like learning a lesson, a really tough lesson, but still ending out on top. Now, we always talk about learning lessons in high school football. There's a lot of them to learn. Some teams learn them by losing in blowout fashion. Some teams learn them by losing in a heartbreaker. This one was where Clovis West learned what it had to do offensively to get better. It has to improve the O-line play. It has to be able to block long enough to give Patrick or whoever's the quarterback time to throw to those superstars. And also, you want to be able to make those plays if you're the superstars. Landon Wright had a huge day. I think he was the X factor for Clovis West. He had that 50-yard touchdown in the first quarter from Patrick. He had the kickoff return touchdown to start the game. He had big play after big play. I think Wright and Sanders, they showed last night why they are one of the best receiver duos in the state. I'm wondering, Clovis West, what can they do to reinsert themselves into the track title picture? Because you look at Clovis North and Clovis East, and they're not really having these close scares. And also, you got to keep in mind who they're facing, right? Clovis North playing Memorial, playing El Diamante. Those aren't going to be challenges as maybe a Lemoore would be for them. But I think Clovis East beating Sanger by 3 touchdowns, a really good Sanger team that the week before dominated Clovis in the second half, I think that tells me that Clovis East, despite what other people may think because of their past, they're the track title contender, and they're showing it by not just beating good teams, but beating them convincingly.
So September 22nd is the bye week before track begins. Clovis West, talk about those three teams. If you're talking about West, North, and East, Clovis West plays Bullard and Edison. Clovis North, let's talk about it right now. They're playing CVC next week, and then they're playing Jay Serra. People forget about that Jay Serra team. A lot of us are, you know, pointing to that CVC, but don't forget about that great Jay Serra matchup on September 15th. And then Clovis East is playing Oak Ridge from Utah on a Saturday game up north, and then they're playing Kerman at home. Okay, Gabe, the wacky tracky, right? Who has impressed you the most? I know you talk a lot about Clovis East. Are they still your top team so far?
Yes, they are. And I'll just kind of elaborate a little bit more on that. Clovis East has a balanced offense, a double threat, running the ball and passing the ball. They ran the ball pretty well against Sanger when it didn't look like Clovis could run the ball against Sanger last week. Clovis East did manage to get the ball moving on the ground, and that kind of opened up the passing game. I like what Colby Hunter does on offense. He will run a play, a specific run play, and then he'll hurry up the offense and catch him with a deep ball. Like, it kind of gets your guys crowded towards the line of scrimmage, and then all of a sudden you got to retreat backward because you're trying to defend a Harold Duval or a Tommy Nix going deep. So I like that creative offense that they have. Clovis East, the reason why that game was tied at halftime, 14-14, was because Sanger ran double the plays as Clovis East. Actually, more than double the plays. It's hard to be able to take the lead at halftime when you only run 15 plays on offense, whereas Sanger ran 32 plays on offense. So if you look at that halftime score, it's really deceiving. Clovis East, I felt, was the better team throughout Thursday night, and the fact that they were that much better than probably the CMAC champion Sanger Apaches, they're beating good teams in the non-conference league. I don't care if they have Kerman on the schedule. They have Sanger on the schedule, and they beat him by 3 touchdowns.
Buchanan is taking on Liberty at home next week. Yep, that Liberty from Bakersfield, a game I believe we're going to have on 1430 ESPN. And they finish on a Thursday before their bye week against San Joaquin Memorial. Central's going to be playing Bishop Diego next week. And then the same Liberty team in Bakersfield. So big matchups there. And then Clovis High, Thursday, home against Salinas. There we go, Gabe. Another Thursday game that we love. We're able to watch those games from the sidelines. And then Clovis ends with Bullard away. All right, let's preview a little bit, Gabe, of the Clovis North and CVC game next week. Oh, man, what a tasty, tasty matchup that is. The running attack from Clovis North, Jackson Sinfield, McKay Madsen, Mario Cosma, their quarterback, who, yes, we give that guy a lot of love. He's a really good quarterback for them. CVC, Bryson Donaldson just is again, and looks like CVC's quarterback had a monster game last night, 18 for 19 for 330 yards and 3 touchdowns against Bakersfield Christian. So, fireworks, and more fireworks next week.
Yeah, I want to see how Bakersfield Christian's defense did against CVC, what led to those big passing numbers for the Cavaliers, because I think Clovis North isn't going to give up that many passing yards. Maybe they'll give up a lot of rushing yards because Bryson Donaldson is, in many people's opinions, the best running back in the Central Section. The kid's going to either go to Boise State, Fresno State, or Boston College to play college football. And Mason Hughes, having that guy back from last year, I think that's a huge boost to this team. We knew it going into the year, but we didn't realize how huge of a boost it is. It boosted the Cavaliers from being a team that had to replace 8 starters on defense, and you're asking yourself, okay, how is this Cavs defense going to be able to stop anybody? Well, they're playing pretty well. And that offense now is, well, doing things that Donaldson can do, like break big plays, catch long passes. The thing about Donaldson is he's listed at running back, but I know that dude's one of the best pass catchers in the Valley, too. He's kind of a double threat with his receiving and running, so I think that's something that Clovis North needs to key in on, because I'm pretty sure when you look at the stats, what Brent Cruz did against Bakersfield Christian, a lot of that was throwing the ball to number 6, Bryson Donaldson.
Yeah, and Gunnar Peepgrass for the Cavaliers had 8 receptions for 210 yards and 3 TDs. So,
oh, my gosh.
Like big plays, yeah. Monster game from Gunnar Peepgrass.
Do you think that they could do that against Clovis North?
No, probably not. I'll be honest, right? I mean, we've seen Clovis North up close. They got some dudes on defense. Yeah, it's going to be, you know, there might be a lot of points, but I don't. Yeah, I don't see the game in the 50s, that's for sure. It could be in the 40s or 30s. But also remember, CVC came in and beat Clovis North at Veterans Memorial Stadium. You don't think those Broncos remember that. And I don't want to necessarily use the word embarrassed on their home field in Clovis, but, you know, that was kind of a shock, sent shockwaves up and down the Central Section.
Yeah, it did. I also want to give a shout-out here real quick to another team that I think had an interesting result that I'm not sure what to make of. Central beating Turlock 21-18. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. What do you got?
Well, I mean, I don't know what to make of that. Turlock gave up 56 points to Clovis West, and then they gave up they kept Central to 21. Like, that's
it could
weird.
Have been a little blip on the radar. Four turnovers on offense.
Okay, thank you for telling me that. Thank you for telling me that. That's why I asked
you. Two in the
red
zone. Yeah, and there was a snap over the quarterback's head that they recovered on the 5-yard line. And Noe Felix got banged up, too. So, hey, kind of a – if you think about it, right, with Clovis West as well, they had to grind out that win, right? There's always games on the schedule through a 10-game season where you're going to have to grind out a win where things don't go as planned. You got to make adjustments and step up.
Well, hey, like I said earlier, you always learn lessons every year. Sometimes you learn lessons losing, and you leave the field heartbroken. But that wasn't Clovis West last night. They're lucky enough to say they learned a big lesson, maybe something that makes them better and makes them a track champion again. And they did it winning. And if they lost to Lamar, that could have definitely sunk their season. That could have been the biggest downer ever because they lost to a Division II, Division III team. But that wasn't the case last night. They won. They scored with 25 seconds left. And that's the thing, right? Lamar played such a fantastic game. Kobe Green had one of the best single-game performances we'll see this year. Two interceptions and a kickoff return touchdown. And it means absolutely nothing because they lost. And that sucks.
Well, Gabe, I hit the refresh button on our Cal Prep's website, and we have a little bit of update. So we got about a minute here, Gabe, and Liberty is number one, Central's number two, Clovis West is three, Clovis North is four, Clovis East is five, CVC is six, St. Joseph seven, Lamar eight, Buchanan nine, even though they lost, still ninth, and then Hanford 10. In your poll, really quick, Gabe, are you going to keep Liberty at one, or are you going to bump Clovis East or North up to number one?
Liberty, I believe, was rated coming into this week, the number 9 team in the state. And that was, I think, a tie game at one point, right? 14-14.
It was.
Santa Margarita scored. I meant to say Santa Margarita was the number 9 team in the state. Santa Margarita beat them, scored in the last 20 points unanswered. I don't think Liberty should be knocked off as the number 1 team. But I will say this. Clovis North and Clovis East at the end of this month, going to probably be a huge track. I don't say track title game, but pivotal to the track title, because I feel like the winner of Clovis North versus Clovis East, their next game is going to be against Clovis West, and that might be for the track championship. But also Central also is in the picture too. Like, if those mistakes were made, like you said, against Turlock and those are fixed, then Central's definitely going to be considered there too. So again, like you said earlier, the track has no clear front runner, but the team that's been most impressive through the first three games, you have to say it's the Clovis East Timberwolves. And don't give me that malarkey that they're playing nobody. They play the Sanger Apaches. That's the best team in the CMAC. And that's a team that could probably play Division I this year. So, yeah, I don't care if they're playing Kerman. They're playing Sanger. That's a team that I really have a lot of respect for. And they're also playing these two out-of-town teams. So we'll see how they do in the Honor Bowl this week against, you said, a team from Utah, Provo?
Yep, exactly. And, I got mad love for Clovis East. We got Harold Duvall and Tyus Miller coming up at the top of hour number two. But, hey, Gabe, my pick. I still like Clovis North. I like those Broncos. Those guys are a mean machine right now. So good job by you, my friend. Always fun talking, chopping it up, high school football with you.
Yeah, hey, thoughts and prayers to Mikey Keene. He got out of the game injured, limped to the locker room. Hopefully he's able to come back in this game. But 21-17 Purdue at halftime. Dylan Lynch of Liberty Bakersfield fame kicked a 51-yarder as time expired to cut the lead to four.
All right, awesome. All right, we'll talk to you soon, my friend.
All right, thank you, Paul.
All right, coming up after the break, we're talking to Shafter football. Those Generals beat Bakersfield. Yes, those Bakersfield Drillers last night, 31-17. We're going to talk with their head coach, Gerald Perucci, next on 1430 ESPN. Really good conversation with Gabe Camarillo about games that going on last night and Thursday. I mean, one thing to remember too is that these are high school kids. These are high school kids, right? And you know, a lot of us, we remember what we were doing in high school. We're a bunch of dumb guys sometimes, right? But these kids are amazing student athletes. We love to highlight all the good stuff that they do, and there is tons and tons of good stuff to talk about. One great story that's been going on down in Shafter, wherever you're at, is the football program. Gerald Perucci, their head coach, last night they beat Bakersfield 31 to 17. They were down 14-2 at halftime. It was a game that we were following. They're the defending D4 Central Section champs. Just had an incredible run. I loved talking to Coach Perucci last year. Incredible guy. Coach, what's up? How are you feeling this fine Saturday morning?
I'm a little hoarse, but pretty good. How are you doing, Paul?
Oh, I'm doing great. All right. Yeah, so you sound like you coached a hard-fought football game last night. So, you know, I mentioned you guys were down 14-2 at half, and you guys stormed back. I'm like, oh, Shafter's getting close. Oh, Shafter just took the lead. Oh, Shafter just scored a touchdown to put it away. So just kind of walk us through that game, maybe even, you know, your mentality going to that game. But walk us through that game and the atmosphere and how you guys came out on top.
Well, we knew going in that our offensive line and our run game was really something that we're going to hang our hat on. I mean, they got a back end that's extremely athletic and fast, and even though we have speed, we didn't have, you know, when you have four guys that can run and, you know, we have like two and a half, you know, it's one of those things where they could take away a lot of our passing game stuff. And so we knew going in that we were going to have to grind a little bit, and the first half we were able to do that. You know, we fumbled down on the three going in the first half and missed out on an opportunity there. And, you know, we gave up two. I mean, it's just they threw a nine ball with like 7 seconds left in the half. And then we gave up where they, you know, their running back hit a just kind of jump cut back on the back door of a play where we had them bobbled up pretty good and then broke for like a 50-yard, 45-yard run. And we knew that they had that capability. But we knew we could really grind them if we could just get into a rhythm. And we had a lot of procedural penalties in the first half, too. I don't know if it's nerves or what, but very uncharacteristics of our guys that really put us back offensively. You know, it's tough to call plays when you're second and 22, you know. And so, but, you know, that's the thing. Late in the game, we were able to grind. And Chris Espinoza, our big running back, and our offensive line just did a great job in the second half, and we just wore them down. I mean, you know, Chris coming through and putting the lumber down on a safety or an outside linebacker, you know, early in the game, those tackles kind of bounce off, or, you know, they take them. Later in the game, those become arm tackles, and it became that's late in the game. We were just able to wear them down in the box and exert ourselves in the run game late in the second half. So it was good, but it was a great environment. I mean, BHS showed up, and then, you know, the city of Shafter shows up wherever we go. And it was just a great high school football environment. It was fun.
Talking with Gerald Perducci, whose Shafter Generals beat Bakersfield last night. So you guys were down, according to Max Preps, 14-2 at halftime. You guys got that safety, looks like with about 2 minutes left, 2 or 3 minutes left. But what was the message at halftime? Obviously, the, you know, you're frustrated with the offense. You mentioned that Bakersfield has some dudes, and, you know, it's tough to call plays when you put yourself in holes sometimes. But what was the message at halftime?
Well, we made some little adjustments defensively. My defensive staff, Adam Clayton, who's my DC, did a great job of making some simple adjustments that allowed us to jump between coverages. You know, their quarterback is, you know, their first three guy got hurt early in the or midway through the second quarter, and prayers for him because he broke his femur, and so that's quick recovery for that young man. So their second string guy, we've seen him on film, he's played, and he's very much if the first guy isn't open, he's going to pull the ball down and try to run. So giving him some different looks defensively so he couldn't just know pre-snap, or the OC just couldn't know pre-snap, hey, we're in cover three or quarters or something along those lines, that they could help the kid out. So constantly changing and moving alignments and stuff was a big thing defensively. And then offensively, it was, you know, we did a lot of good things. You know, Easy had some good balls we dropped. He made some poor decisions too. You know, offensive line wise, I felt like we were doing okay, but, you know, we just struggled. They were fresh. I think that's I had to allow them to go. But the biggest thing was the mental mistakes. And that's the thing that I harped on. It's one thing to lose to a team that is just flat out beating you. It's another when you know you should be doing better than you are because you're making those mental mistakes. So challenging them challenging our guys just to lock in a little bit more. And in the second half, we played a much cleaner game. It wasn't perfect, but much cleaner game defensively. Just, I mean, we outscored them. I think they scored 3 points in the second half. So, you know, that when your defense rises up like that, it helps out too. So they built defense did a good job of handling, helping the offense, and the offense helped the defense. And then when we both failed, you know, we had a huge turn by Marion Sloan to start out the second half. And that's kind of started the snowball effect of us starting to roll.
Yeah. Well, you guys outscored them, 29-3 the rest of the way. Yeah, talk about that. You're talking about that kickoff return, and then you mentioned your quarterback Ezekiel Osborne, and you know he got on the radar of a lot of people last year with that incredible run, and he's put up some really good numbers that first two games. Just talk about your sophomore quarterback, and you know I know you've raved about him in the past, and you'll say he made some bad reads, right? You're obviously very, very honest with him as well, but I mean, how good of a kid is he on and off the field? That guy can sure sling it, but he's a good kid as well, isn't he?
Oh, no, he's a great student, and he's a great human being. I think that's the thing with, you know, a lot of times you always have those guys that are good athletes or whatever, but, you know, if their stuff on the field doesn't match their stuff off the field, sometimes it's tough to root for those type of kids, because it's like, yeah, you want them to have success, but it's, you know, doing the right thing on the field and doing the right thing off the field just makes that athlete just that much more easier to root for. And Easy's a great kid. He comes from a great family, and a kid that takes coaching. I think, you know, his nickname of Easy is really just super indicative of his mentality. You know, he came off a few times and I got into him a little bit, and he understood, and then he made some great throws. You know, we weren't able to connect a couple times, or our protection broke down on opportunities a few times. But, he could have had a bigger game than what he had, had some things gone his way a little bit more. But, you know, he made some really nice throws, made some poor throws too. And that's the thing that I kept telling him, you know, hey, the little mistakes to that you can get away with against some of the other teams that we play, yeah, against teams that have speed, and it's just a bigger schools, those little things are what leads to, you know, to not having success, and, you know, not looking off safeties or you know, not stepping in the throws, not understanding the throw to make depending on the defensive alignment or the, you know, the corner's drop or whatever the case may be. That's the difference between success and not having success, and little things. And so that's why these games against BHS and next week BCHS are just big for us as developmental, as a team, that we're going to see probably the best athletes that we're going to see all year. So it was good for him to go through that and kind of get into the fire a little bit. It's just going to make him better.
Well, was there a huge celebration after the win? You mentioned the history that Bakersfield had, and one of the most storied programs in California history. I mean, was it a huge celebration? Was it like, hey, we expected to win this game, business as usual? I mean, talk about what went on the field after the game.
I think for the kids, I mean, the kids live in the now. You know, yeah. I mean, they have no idea about, they know a little bit about the past. They know,
sure.
But, you know, so I think that goes for most kids. I mean, I know when I was in high school, it's like, I barely know what I'm going to do 5 minutes from now, and who knows what I did yesterday.
Yeah.
So it's like they realize, but they don't really realize. But it's the old generals, it's the old guard that is just, you know, that knows BHS for being BHS. And that's, I mean, my phone's been blowing up all last night and today, and social media stuff, just, you know, just from a lot of alumni that were just really into the game, and for our fan base that just shows up. It was a big deal to them. I think our kids are just, it's a big deal to go up and be in a bigger school. I think that's probably the bigger thing for them. The historical value of it, you know, I mean, shoot.
That's for guys like us, right? They really soak that in.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it really is. It's for us. And they'll understand it as they get older, how big of a deal it was. I mean, the first time that we've ever played each other, the two oldest schools. I mean, we're coming up on 100 years here, and shoot, BHS has been open for 1,000 years. So it's for that whole thing, and doing it on Griffith Field. I mean, that field has seen a lot of football and a lot of greats. So I think for the fans, the older fans and stuff, alumni, really big game for them and just big. The kids, I think it's just like, hey, we went out and did what we did. We had some adversity and really rose up to it and really just took the opportunity. So for them, it's just a maybe might be a little bit business as usual, but I think for the most part that they understand the bigness of it. I think the people they know and the older people in their lives will help them realize it's a big deal.
No, it is. They'll be able to look at that game and realize, yeah, okay, yeah, remember that game, that time we beat Bakersfield in Bakersfield?
Yeah.
I'm sure, yeah, they created some great memories. We got a couple minutes here with Coach Gerald Perucci. All right, I want to talk a little bit about league, right? So, Kennedy, I got that earmarked Friday, October 20th. That is going to be a incredible football game. But really, just kind of give an overview of your league in about a minute and some of the schools that that do really well in your league.
You know, the SSL really prepares – that's what I've always been happy about, the SSL. The SSL prepares us for pretty much any offense that we're going to see moving forward through the playoffs. And so – and you get to see some good athletes. Obviously, Kennedy and us have been the people that, you know, consistently probably playing for championships in the SSL. Our game has become a bit of a rivalry, you know, for, I know our kids and I know their kids. It's just, yeah, it's a big game, and we go back to back. We go Kennedy, then Wasco, which is the rivalry. And so, it's our league is, you know, we're, you know, we have, I just think every Friday is a drop down drag out battle in the SSL, and it's a tough league to coach in, just because you have some good coaches that do a lot of good things with their kids, but it's also, I'm appreciative of it because what it prepares us for. So yeah, we'll be looking forward to that too, but we got a lot of games to get through.
No, you do.
In order for that to be a big, like I tell my kids, you got to win games in order to be in big games. So we have a lot of games to go through. If both teams take care of business like we think we can, I think it could be a really good game.
No, absolutely. I know us guys, we like to look ahead and point to games in the future. But I know as a coach, you're like, guys, we got a lot more games before that big Kennedy matchup. All right, Coach, last question before we go. Hey, you're a self-professed Star Wars, Marvel nerd kind of guy like me. I'm self-professed. I'm not ashamed at that. Are you still in charge of like the gaming club there, Shafter? Remember we talked about that last year. Is that what that is?
I've kind of given it over to another lady.
Oh, got it.
But I've been the succession hasn't taken over yet, so I'm still the lead guy on that person. But yeah, I talked to the kids on Thursday. They practice in my lab, so I communicate with them all the time, and we talk about different League of Legends strategies and stuff like that. Hey, but what do you think of Ahsoka so far?
I thought it was okay. I thought it was pretty good. I think when Grand Admiral Thrawn, I mean, gosh, I can't believe I just said that on air. When he shows up, I think the show is going to really take off. But I think it's pretty good.
Looking forward to, I think this next episode is going to be really big. So I agree with you. Yeah, you just talked about nerd stuff on sports radio. I love it.
I just did. All right. Always love talking to you, my friend, and good luck the rest of the way. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Talk to you later.
All right, you bet. All right, coming up after the break, after the hard break, we got Ty Miller and Harold Duvall of Clovis East coming up on 1430 ESPN.
Wait, no. We don't like that world. Different world, please. Ah, that's better. The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
Welcome, everybody, to hour number two of the Central Valley Sports Report. Here on 1430 ESPN. I am your host, Paul Metters, live at First String Sports. You know where First String Sports is, Blackstone Avenue in between Sierra and Herndon. Come on in here. Get your letterman's jacket. Get your uniforms, your hats. There's a wall here with all the hats of the high school programs here in the central section. It's awesome. You see Buchanan and Roosevelt and Clovis High and Clovis West and do my show from the Letterman's Jacket Room. This is definitely the place to be. Love doing my show here. So thanks to First String Sports for being just such wonderful hosts and sponsors. And speaking of great things, high school, football, I got two of the best in the Central Section, Ty Miller and Harold Duvall, Clovis East football. These guys, I've watched these guys for a few years now. We're going to be talking with both of them about the season so far, the ups and downs. You know, the Timberwolves are 3-0 right now. They defeated Sanger 42-21. Mr. Duvall had two touchdown receptions from Ty Miller. Had a pick six. It was right in front of me. That was awesome to watch. First of all, thanks, guys, for coming in. Really appreciate you.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks.
And it was late notice, right? Like, Coach Nagel from Clovis East was able to come. He's like, can I send Harold and Ty? I'm like, heck yeah, bring those two guys. What time did Coach text you? Like 8:30 in the morning?
8:30, yeah.
All right, no problem. You guys are able to get here. But I got to ask you, I got to start off with this. Right, usually athletes come in, they're dripped out. I mean, I like your tops. You guys are looking cool with your tops and your blue jeans. Sometimes guys have sweats or a hat, right? But you guys came in with your boots,
yes,
right?
Sir.
It looked like work boots, right? I mean, workmen's boots. So, Ty, talk to me about these boots. What's up with you guys? Coordinate this, or just how you guys roll?
Yeah, it's kind of like a culture thing. Friday, we always wear boots when it's not too hot, and it kind of represents our work ethic and. All week we work, and that's like we like wearing boots, and I think it kind of sets a tone and it gets us in a mindset like we're gonna outwork you.
So it's a whole team thing. So yeah. Everybody's got their own boots.
Yeah, coaches, players, the whole team.
Who pays for the boots?
Oh, we got them.
You got them?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are they all the same? Like you guys all go to the same boot store?
No, they're all different.
They're all different.
Yeah.
So choose your own boots.
Yeah.
All right. Love it. All right. What do you guys usually eat for breakfast? I know you guys – it was different. You guys played on Thursday, right? Normally on Saturdays, you guys are doing a flush and film and maybe a light workout. But, like, you guys big breakfast guys on these Saturdays?
Not really.
Not really?
I can't really eat in the morning, so I'll just wake up, eat some yogurt, some almonds, some nuts, drink some milk. That's pretty much it.
Okay, not bad. Ty, what about you?
For me, it's like a protein drink and a waffle, like something light.
And a waffle? Do you put syrup? Jelly or butter and all that stuff, or you just plain waffle guy?
Just a plain waffle, heat it up and go.
In the toaster? Put it in the toaster, let that thing pop up, or are you making it in like the griddle?
Like a toaster.
A toaster.
Yeah, like all a right. microwavable waffle.
All right, so like 8 seconds and you got your waffle. All right, cool. After a football game, though, how sore is your body? Ty, obviously you're a quarterback. You know, you've been hit a few times over your career, but how sore, how does your body recover after a game?
Yeah. Waking up the next morning is always pretty rough. I think it depends on how many hits you take that night, but usually my calves, my hamstrings are pretty tight. And then, like, random injury or, like, bruises that you never expect to have are just, like aching in the morning. And you're just like, dang, I don't want to wake up. But it gets better.
It gets
the day.
Better. All right, how about for you, Harold?
Like right after the game, you feel fine. You feel perfect. Like you play another game. Then you go to sleep, and as soon as you wake up the next morning, you feel like you can't walk anymore. You feel like you got hit by a Mack truck.
And you're a receiver / DB / safety kick returner, right? And so yeah. Imagine what these linemen are hitting every play and these linebackers, what those guys feel like. You're right. I mean, after the game on Thursday, Ty Miller, after the game, he's got his stuff off. He's sweating. But he's running around like he wants to play again, huh?
Yeah, like after.
High energy. Look at this guy.
Can't sit around.
You can't sit around. You're ready to go again. Let's talk about that Sanger game. Tied 14-14 at half. Right, stuff wasn't clicking. A few mistakes here and there. So second half, like how do you guys get rolling? Ty, how did that second half get rolling?
Going into the locker room after the first half, like we didn't get the ball much on offense, had three or four drives. We were doing okay, but I saw on some guys' faces like they were a little bit worried, and we kind of had to rally the troops. Like, guys, we're in this. We knew it was going to be tough, but we're not tired. We're not hurting, and I think we came out the second half like, it's do or die, and we knew the preparation, the conditioning. We knew that we had it in us. And so I think it was really our defense setting the tone the second half, getting a turnover, that just confidence boost. Like after that happened, I'm like, I know how this game's going to go.
Well, Sanger's tough to play against because they control the ball so long, and you guys are sitting on the sidelines. Well, you're playing defense, though, Harold, but Ty, you're sitting on the sidelines. You're like, come on, let's get the ball. Let's go. You're a little bit antsy. But, Harold, in a situation like that where or you guys are tied at halftime, it's anybody's ball game. Do you feel a little extra pressure in the second half to perform? You're like, man, let's just do our thing. What's your mindset?
No, I felt like the game plan was there the whole game. We just weren't executing it as we needed to. And I felt like going into the second half, we started executing that, our game plan, and things were there. Things started opening up. But I didn't feel like I needed to play any different. I just needed to keep playing my game because we practice for stuff like this. We practice the same tempo as games, so it's really nothing different.
And that touchdown catch where I barely got a view of it on the sidelines, and I just heard the roar of the crowd. Ty, you threw it to Harold, laid out, kind of a one-handed catch, diving, corralled it. I think that made it a 2-touchdown lead, maybe a 3-touchdown lead at that point. Ty, I want to ask you first of all, the play call, and then, you know, how far ahead are you going to have to throw it? Because you know this guy's ability, but, you know, talk about that play call and then lofting it up to Harold.
Yeah, so I knew the call was coming just based off what was happening. They had number 2 over Harold, and they had their safety cheated over, and we were like, this is what we want. Like, this is how we're going to do it. And we were like, Harold, it's your turn. Like, go be an athlete, go win. It's like a one-on-one. So we called for Harold's number, and I'm going through my drop, and I see the DB kind of flat-footed but really physical. I see him hit Harold. I take a hitch, and then I just see Harold explode, and he's still kind of holding on to Harold, but I knew, like, right when the ball left my hand, I'm like, God, that's gonna be a touchdown. I knew Harold had it. There's no doubt in my mind.
No doubt in your mind. But, I mean, how impressive and how fun is it to, like, you might even become a fan at one point. You're like, I'm tossing this thing up, and you're watching it like, oh, yeah, my guy's going to catch this, right? Harold, walk us through that play, what you saw, and your decision to lay out, and when you caught that ball, what was going through your mind?
I knew it was one-on-one coverage, and I know he couldn't really guard me, so I tried to get past him. He's playing physical. He's grabbing the whole time, slapped his arms down, still grabbing. I see the ball in there, and I'm running. I'm like, I can't really reach that. So I just saw the ball, and I just went and got the ball, and I dove out, and I made the catch.
That's pretty amazing. Then you hear the roar of the crowd on that side. You're like, oh, my gosh, that dude caught it.
Yeah, it was loud.
Yeah, it was loud. That was – I got to give props to your student section. That place was packed. La Monica Stadium on your side. Sanger brings a great crowd as well. But the side for the home team – was absolutely crazy, and it was fun to watch. Ty, you said something really interesting that I want to explore a little bit more. How do you, as a quarterback, you mentioned you saw the DB was flat-footed and grabbing. You got so much going on. How are you able to process the reads, you know, if there's a blitz? How are you able to process all of those things and yet still see that the DB is flat-footed? And, I mean, explain what goes through your mind.
Yeah, it starts, like, before the snap. Like, right when the play call comes in, I'm looking around, and I'm like, all right, I know what's going to happen. Not completely, but mostly before the play even starts. And then I trust my linemen. They're great. They're hardworking. And I knew we had the right protection on. And as the ball was snapped, I just had my eyes on that DB, knowing that the safety was too far over. And I'm like, I saw him take, like, a little back pedal, and I saw Harold meet him, and I knew Harold was going to go by him, and that's when I just let it go.
Well, is the game slow to you? Maybe that's where I'm getting, like, for you to be able to see that, you're only a junior. I know you play quarterback since your freshman year, but, I mean, is that natural to you that you're able to process all those things at once?
Yeah, the game's definitely slowed down. I think it definitely comes with preparation and coaching and teaching. And in practice, lots of teaching moments, a lot of great coaching, and just being on the same page as everyone else out there. But it's definitely slowed down throughout the years. I remember my freshman year, everything was lightning fast, but yeah.
And we saw that. We covered a couple of your games, and you were just a freshman out there running around a couple times. And for you to come that far to be the quarterback that you are is really amazing. Harold, I want to ask you about your pick six late in the game. Were you playing? You were playing safety on that play, weren't you?
Yes, sir.
Playing basically center field, right?
Yeah.
And threw it up there. I'm like, hey, Harold's got a good chance of getting this right to you. Just explain what you saw, right? I mean, the play was right in front of you, and just hitting that sideline and taking it to the house.
Yeah, as soon as I saw the quarterback throw the ball up, there was no one back there, so I just went and took the ball. Then I got a couple good blocks from some linebackers, some safeties, my teammates. And I hit that sideline. I was running with my teammates. There was one person trying to tackle me, but it was too late, so I knew it was going to be a touchdown.
It was too late, and it was cool, man. There were a lot of photographers and little kids down there. And how cool is that when you're walking back to your sideline knowing you had a great pick six? Like, everyone's like, Harold, and pounding on you and stuff. How cool is that?
It felt great. It felt like what you were practicing for all week paid off. And then you had all the little kids in the stands. It was like I was just there last week, a couple years. It was just cool. They, like, look up to me.
That's great. And that was a big win for you guys. I know you guys, last year's a game that we covered. You guys beat Sanger pretty handily last year. You had a really good game, Harold, in that one as well. But we knew how tough Sanger was. They were better than last year, much, much improved. But what did that win against Sanger? I know you guys have a really tough schedule when the league starts. But what did that win mean for you guys and for your program moving forward?
We knew people always doubted us, and we knew people had us as the underdogs in that game. So it was just like a proving game, a proving point for us. And for to come out with that win, it showed people that we're not the old Clovis East, and we're still here. We're still here.
Talking with Harold Duvall and Ty Miller of Clovis East Football. Ty, you mentioned a little bit your O-line, how you love those guys. So give some love to your O-line right now. Who are your dudes?
I'll start with the tackles, Anthony Razzo and Marcus Avila, big guys, and one thing I love about them is their work ethic. They never stop, and, like, practices are hard. A lot of mistakes are made. There's a lot of yelling, and they persevere, and they don't ever give up, and they fight every day for me and for the people around them, for their brothers on the O-line, and they're just getting better and better, and it's not going to stop. They're going to skyrocket, and they're going to be great. We're going to have one of the best O-lines in the Valley.
You do. You do have one of the best O-lines in the Valley. Those guys are your O-line is much improved from last year, a year older. I know you got some transfers, but your O-line looks super strong. Harold, I want to go back to last year. We talked a little bit after the Sanger game about this, and last year was a tale of two seasons, so to speak. The first season, you guys were 6-0. You guys were rolling. And then you got hurt, and then the season spun a little bit out of control. You know, how hard was it for you not to be able to contribute on the field, standing on the sidelines, and then persevering through your injury?
It was hard because when you're on the sideline, you see stuff, and you see that if you're on the field, you can like change the game. And just like being on the sideline, not being able to help my teammates, it just hurt me. So I hit rehab hard, and I knew the harder I hit rehab, the faster I'll be out back on the field working, getting ready for this season right now.
So it was about like an 8-month process? Because you played varsity basketball as a freshman, and you missed your whole basketball season. Was it like an 6-month injury, an 8-month injury? How long did it take?
Yeah, it was a long injury. It happened September, and then we didn't really know what it was, so we just thought it was a hamstring injury. So we just played it by the week, and I still played on it. Then I got an MRI and found out my growth plate was fractured. So we shut the season down, hit rehab hard right away, and rehab was from, I think, like November to February, and then after that, I had to ease back into stuff. So I missed the whole basketball season. I missed the track season, so I was just looking forward to this football season. So that was basically the only thing I could do.
What was there a moment, Harold, when you were recovering that you felt like, man, I'm 100%? Because athletes talk about that. Obviously, the mentality, too, is different. You know, you don't want to get hurt again. But was there a specific moment you remember in rehab? Like, yeah, I'm back. Maybe you made a catch or dunked a basketball or something like that.
Yeah, it was – we had weightlifting. We were in the weight room. And I usually, when I first got hurt, like, throughout the months, I had, like, aching pain. And we were just playing basketball, playing around in the gym. And my legs felt really good. I just grabbed the ball and dunked it, and I felt like, yeah, I'm back. I'm ready.
Well, there it is. There it is. Ty, I want you to talk about Harold a little bit. I mean, mentioned how the season kind of spun out of control when Harold got hurt. I know there were a lot of other injuries as well, but how valuable is this guy to your football program and your school?
Man, he's such a, a huge value, not just as a player, but as a person. He's a great leader, a great teammate, and he really helps rally everyone together, get us together. But then he also shows it on the field. Like, he's not gonna let anything go past him. He's that guy.
He's that guy. Harold, what can you say about Ty and what he means to you personally and what he means to the program?
Yeah, like me and Ty have been really close for a really long time. He's always been a leader ever since I met him. On campus, he'll hold you accountable for your schoolwork. He knows how good you can be in the classroom and on the field. And he just holds you to such a high standard. Like, makes you want to be a better player. And then on the field, everyone just looks up to Ty. He's a freshman that started on varsity as a quarterback. It's like the hardest position to start at. And everyone just looks up to him. They look at him like a big brother, and everyone, we love him for that.
All right, who's faster? All right, we lined you guys up on the 40. Who do we got?
I feel like it'll be close, but I think my stride will get him.
Stride? All right. Yeah. What do you think, Ty?
Honestly, I think I would start out pretty hot. I'd be feeling myself. I would be running, and then like last 20 yards, he would just like zoom by.
All right. Yeah, he's got the long legs. How tall are you, Harold?
6'2".
6'2". Okay, and Ty, what are we clocking you at? 5'10"?
Yeah.
All right, we'll say 5'10". All right. Can Harold throw a football, though? Have you seen this guy throw a football? Pretty or ugly or what? Can he get it done?
You know, he's been to so many training sessions. His form is getting there, and it's a work in progress.
Okay.
A work in progress.
I try to put in all the stuff I see him do with Pinelli, but it's not there. It's not really there. Furthest I can throw is like 20 yards.
Oh, okay. WIP. So you're not going to do a double pass with Harold. That's not a Coach Hunter's playbook, is it?
Maybe next year.
All right, maybe. all right, but can Ty, on the flip side, can Ty play basketball?
Yeah, Ty's really good at
what?
Basketball. Yeah.
What?
He used to play all the time, but then high school, you can pick one sport. He picked baseball and football.
What kind of a player were you then? You're just a
point guard.
I was not a shooter. Let's just say that. My shot is pretty ugly.
He's like a slasher. Take the ball and speed past everyone. He'll go lay the ball up.
Yeah. I was pretty good at defense, too.
That's what I would assume. You were probably a pest on defense, right? Lots of steals, getting in guys' grill. All right. So now we know a lot of great things about you, but now we know Harold struggles throwing the football. Ty struggles shooting a basketball. All right. So it's even. What's the ceiling for this year? What are the goals? You guys have two more games. You have Oak Ridge on Saturday. That game's going to be at noon.
We play on Saturday. We play
Provo, huh?
Provo.
Yeah, okay. In Provo. You're playing Provo,
from
but
Utah, yeah.
In Sacramento.
Yeah.
Okay, that's going to be on Saturday at 12 o'clock, I believe. And then you got Kerman, and then a bye week, and then you start off with Clovis North. And we know how good the track is going to be, right? I don't need to tell you that. What's the ceiling for this team? What are the goals? Is it a game-to-game thing? Do you guys want to win the track? Do you have a mind on Valley? Or what's the mindset, Ty?
Yeah, I think kind of week to week, we talk about maxing out our potential, and we know that we can be that team. We can be a championship caliber team, and it's about the work that we put in and the stuff we do on the field, off the field, rehab, how we study. But I think as we go along and we start to get better, and as we max our potential and we connect more, I think we could be a championship caliber team, track or Valley.
What do you think, Harold?
I think we go week by week, because when you look too far ahead, that's when you lose the view of the game you have the next week. So we just focus on the team we have in front of us instead of looking too far ahead. We see a team, we game plan, we play them, then we go to the next team. We don't look 2 weeks ahead, 3 weeks ahead, track, playoffs. We go week by week.
All right, last question here for you guys. What do you guys like better, college football or pro football, and who are your favorite players that you love to watch? Ty, we'll start. Actually, Harold, we'll start with you. Pro or college, and who are your dudes?
I like college football better. There's more like a tradition, more the better fan bases in college football, but I like Ohio State. I like every receiver on Ohio State. Carnell Tate, he's a freshman. Marvin Harrison, one of the best receivers in the nation. Xavier Worthy from Fresno, I look up to him a lot. Jeremiah Hunter, look up to him. He's from Fresno. And then Jalen McMillan, I look up to him a lot because we used to train together. He's like, he's a big role model to me.
Those are all three really good players, Central and San Joaquin Memorial. All right, I got one more question, though. College interest, Harold? Like, are teams reached out, or would you love to play at the Division I level?
I would love to go to the next level and play college football. A couple of schools have reached out to me, Pac-12, Big Ten, but nothing really yet because still in season, they're starting their season, they can't really reach out. Well, they can reach out because I'm a junior now, but I'm just trying to build week by week and get all my film together so I can give it to them after the season.
Awesome. Ty, college pro, and who are your dudes?
Definitely college football. I love watching college football. Fresno State, I was just watching it earlier. Play Purdue. It was a good game so far. And then I like watching BYU and with Keaton Slovis. That's gonna be really cool. They're gonna be pretty good. And then I like fantasy football. Gotta watch my guys. My team is going to be good.
All right. Good stuff. Ty Miller, Harold Duvall, thank you guys for coming. Really enjoyed watching you guys this year. Hopefully we'll be able to watch you guys a couple more times this season. Good luck the rest of the way. You guys are fine young men on and off the field. Really appreciate you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
You bet. All right. Ty Miller, Harold Duvall, Clovis East coming up after the break. Sticking with the track, Clovis West head coach Eric Brown on 1430 ESPN. Bottom of hour number two. This is the Central Valley Sports Report. I'm your host, Paul Metters. God, that was a lot of fun. Sometimes when you bring on student athletes, especially high school kids, you don't know what you're going to get. I had Ty Miller on my show last year. Great kid. Well-spoken. Just a salt kid. Oh, my gosh. Everybody raves about him on and off the field. Just almost too perfect, right? Just such a great kid. And Harold Duvall was awesome as well. And just, I mean, that's as good as 1-2 combos you're going to see, not only in Central Section, but in the state. I mean, just watch him on the field. Clovis East, really good team. Clovis West, really good team as well. Had that great run last year going into the semifinals in D1, track champions. We were able to broadcast their game last night, came away with a one-point win, 27-26 against Lemoore. Game we were able to broadcast. Coach Eric Brown's joining me today here at First String Sports. So, Coach Brown, how much sleep did you get last night? I mean, that game was exciting from our perspective, but down there, I'm sure you're sweating bullets.
Yeah, it was. you can kind of take a step back and look at it as it was an exciting game. And, I think for us, we need that adversity, and we need to fight through that adversity. So I think we look at it as a positive. Lemoore's a good team, man. Mm-hmm. They really are. And they've got enough explosive, talented players, and they also, we talked this morning about as a staff, they did a good job up front, you know, both sides of the ball. They put pressure on us, and then, you know, offensively they were able to pound the ball a little bit, and, you know, I'm sure it was more exciting and more fun to watch, you know, for the fans than it was for us and Lemoore really to be in it. But no, I think you could tell I didn't get much sleep last night.
We'll go over a few details of the game. I mean, lead changes and fumbles and kick returns and just all kinds of wacky stuff. But I mean, when it comes down to it, right? How did you guys pull that game out?
Honestly, some timely stops on defense at the end. You know, we had a fourth down stop and then we had a takeaway. And then our kids believing, you know, on offense that we're dynamic enough to go make a play and score. Even when we got down, you know, we're down late with about 4 minutes left and we score, drive and, you know, run a draw play to one of our really good receivers and he takes it to the house. And then, you know, you're feeling confident. It's 21-20 and, you know, talking to the defense about going and get a stop and we give up a kick return to the house. And our kids didn't flinch, you know, the offense, they said, we're good. And I'm walking out as a coach trying to encourage and keep people's heads up high that, you know, we're still okay. We still got this. We got time. And all of them came to me and said, we're good. We're going to score. Don't worry about it. And so, you know, I think just that mindset, our kids are very confident.
Yeah, the kick return, right? You guys take the lead. And, you know, I felt like momentum then swung to you. Even though you guys were up 14-13 at half, mm-hmm. I still felt like Lemoore had the momentum, had mm-hmm. more of a confidence, right? Because you guys are playing at home and you guys got a really good offense. But Lemoore, you know, as you mentioned, their line was good and their DBs. I was impressed with their DBs. No, they didn't back down. Yep. They have some athletes. But, you know, after that kick return, where then there's a, you know, there's a fourth down stop that you guys have, and then a fumble. I want to go to that final drive, though. Right, you guys are, when did you start on? Maybe like the 20, no, like the 40, because they didn't
close
really
to the
kick
40.
That, about the 40.
That, yeah, so that was the, yeah, that would have been right after the kick return, and yep.
So about the 40 yard line with
I think 222, yeah, 230,
sounds
about
right
on that.
Okay, and one timeout?
We had two timeouts.
We had two timeouts, yep, still.
Okay. And we ended up keeping them, you know.
I think you did,
can't,
huh?
You can't take them home, yeah, with you, but I guess we did last night.
Two timeouts. And Tyler Patrick, who, I mean, he had thrown three picks in that game, mm-hmm, right? He's your senior quarterback. And he made some good throws, mm-hmm, into number five, Marshall Sanders. But let's talk about the confidence in that last drive, the play calling, the guys. You know, a lot of your players go away both ways, your skill athletes. You know, it was a dogfight game. But, you know, that last drive, I mean, that showed a lot.
Yeah. And you got to dig down deep on those last drives. And, you know, Coach Hill always used to talk about must downs and must plays. You know, and there was a few in that game where we had to either get a stop or make a play. I think one of them was on that last drive where we're in third and five, and mm-hmm, TP throws a good out to Titus Kajavi, and, you know, that's ends up being really the game winner. But if we end up in a fourth and six or seven after that play, then now we're in a critical must down for the game. So that drive, we just kind of chipped away, and TP made some good throws on a day where he made some mistakes too, you know, and he's got to, you know, look in the mirror, and obviously as a senior quarterback, he knows he's got to do a better job with some of those. But in the end, he did enough to finish the game and get us a win.
So that pass to Kajavi took you to about the 2 yard line, then you were able
to punch
it in. Oh, did he?
He didn't. You know,
they
rolled
call
him
it
down. And
yeah.
I'm never one to hate on the refs, but he definitely extended the ball and he landed on the player. He scored, but it didn't matter because the next play we were able to
you were able to punch it in. Yeah, that play was on the far, mm-hmm, the worst side for you to really get in the refs, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was
oh,
on
yeah,
the far,
for sure,
the opposite side.
I don't get into the refs. I'm nice to them.
You learn from Coach Hill, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But the D-line, right? Talk about that fourth down stop. If you guys don't get that stop, heck, Lamar could maybe run down the clock to about a minute left. You guys get a fourth down stop and then a fumble recover actually as well. But talk about your defensive line and how well those guys came to play.
Yeah, you know, and it's a fourth and two. It's a critical situation. And I'll be honest with you, we've got a pretty twitchy group, and you could see it, you know, as you watch the game. At times, twitchy groups tend to jump off sides, and they're really anticipating snaps. And you know, we obviously don't coach that. We're trying to make sure that they're locked into the ball and their keys on their get-off. But when they do get off on time, it's pretty nice to see. But, yeah, so it's fourth and two. Obviously, we're talking about hard count and making sure we're keying the ball and we're not jumping off sides. And they did a good job. We were actually playing with a kid out of position in JT Mackey, who's normally a Mike linebacker. We lost Michael Espinoza within the game, so JT has to slide over to Will. And we brought him off the edge, and he made a really good play, got under a blocker, and was able to make the tackle, you know, for a loss of three.
Yeah, and I felt like Lamar's offensive line, like, wasn't able to push, right? Your guy came in and took him down, and, I mean, it was a clear-cut stop on fourth and two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was, you know, a loss of one or two.
Yeah.
You know.
All right, so rotating quarterbacks. A little bit of topic of discussion throughout the central section, right? And What is the thinking behind it, and how are you guys approaching getting your sophomore in for a few reps?
Yeah, you know, and we've been very blessed at Clovis West. We have really good quarterbacks, and I think we always will as we look down our pipeline. We've got two really good quarterbacks right now, and Tyler Patrick is the starting quarterback. But the kid, Tyler Franklin, the young man, he's a sophomore, and he's shown us nothing but really good things in practice. And he's earned the right to have a package where he comes in and gives us a little something different. And, you know, we encourage that, and we're excited when he gets out there. And all of us should root for him in that way, you know. And it's a difficult situation at times. But when you have two good players, I think you got to give them their opportunity to get on the field.
Depth, too. When I look out there, I think I counted about 35 players for you guys. How are you guys as a staff able to manage it? You have some incredible athletes that go both ways, but how are you guys able to manage, you know, a roster of about 35 or so?
No, that's also really hard, you know, and it's us communicating throughout the game. I got to be on as I work with the defensive line with Marcel Sanders as you know, kind of helping me with the D-line. We need to talk constantly with Niles Villalobos about the offensive line because those guys are swinging in and out both ways. And, you know, who are you using this next series and who do I need to kind of avoid the following series? And then I just, you know, as we go, we just talk to the kids. As they come off, they're pretty good about knowing themselves. And if they get – if I'm very clear with them, if they're going to be 80%, I'd rather have the next guy at 100% in there, you know, with their effort. So they're pretty clear if they don't have – what it takes to go 100%, we're going to give them a breather and get them a little water. With the big guys, we try to rotate more on defense. You know, obviously you want to keep that same O-line in as much as you can. And then the skill guys, I think we're able to do it a little bit both ways. But at times we have to rotate more on offense with those guys than defense.
Talking with Clovis West head coach Eric Brown, is Golden Eagles are able to escape. I don't know. Should I use that word escape with 27-26?
I don't think that gives enough credit to Lamore, to be honest with you.
Coming out of my mouth, it doesn't sound very good. Escape. Just, I mean, Lamore was highly ranked. I think I have an 8, 9, or 10 on my overall rankings. I think Lamore lost a lot. Let's just put it that way off of that phenomenal team that they had last year. They lost a lot. So, yeah, escape, that's not a great word. I mean, hard fought. You just say hard fought where each team scored 4 touchdowns, right?
Yep.
So it's just extra point here and there making decisions on that.
And all Lamore showed us so far is a 46-0 win and a 42-0 win in their first 2 games, you know. So if you evaluate what they've done this year, I think they're a solid team. They're a really good team.
How much preparation, Coach, do you guys – go into a football game, right? Sometimes are you gonna have any Thursday games?
We do, yeah.
Thursday against Central.
Yep.
All right, Thursday game against
nice
Central.
Short week against Central.
Short week against Central. But just kind of walk us through preparation for a week. You know, talk to Ty and Harold about the next day. They felt like they got hit by a truck sometimes, right? Just the recovery time. What you guys do on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, leading up to a game.
Yeah, so our guys are there right now. So at 10 o'clock, we get them to check in with our trainer, Josh Adame, who does a really good job. And, you know, then at 11 o'clock, we call it flush and film. So we run them, just striders, you know, and try to get their legs feeling a little bit better. And then we lift. We get a good hard lift in. Some, you know, the guys that are dinged up, they're getting more feel-good lift and, you know, stretching and rolling out. And then, you know, obviously I've got the best strength coach in the Valley with Adam DaCosta. And, you know, I kind of just leave him and he gets them right and they feel better and they believe in him and believe in his process. And then we watch the film from last week, you know, from the night before, and we put it to bed and we really don't talk about it again other than the critical mistakes or critical things that we got to get corrected that we know will be in the next game plan. So by 1:45 today, we'll be on Bullard. And the coaches, you know, I think part of our deal is we work really hard as a staff, but we also have families and we want to be home with our families. And the great thing about technology now is, you know, as we're sitting around iPads and iPhones, all of our film is on that. So as coaches, we go home and we watch Bullard and we start our breakdown process on Saturday. And then Sunday, you know, by mid-afternoon, we're texting and talking to each other about what we like and what goes into the plan. I'm obviously on the defensive side of the ball, and then I check in with Lewis Franklin, you know, Sunday afternoon, Sunday evening, and is it same as last week? Are we adding? What are we adding? What do we like this week? And then Monday morning, start with meetings, get into our first period, and kids go to class. After school, we'll hit a practice. That's usually a split practice between offense and defense. Touch on some of the critical mistakes from the last week that we'll see, you know, in the future opponent. And then move on and hit a little bit of team session, a little bit of individual session. And then Tuesday, we meet in the morning on defense. We meet in the afternoon on offense. And then we have a good, hard, you know, two-hour practice.
So Tuesday's like more of, yeah, we're getting after it. Enough time to recover.
Yep.
We're going to do some Yeah, some
so
changes.
Really, Tuesday, Wednesday are the days that, we try to get after it. Those are the good, you know, Tuesday about 2 hours on the field. Wednesday is about 1:45 on the field. Both those days we include special teams, about 20 minutes of special teams. And, you know, as you talked about our guys playing both ways, we split our practice right down the middle. So we go half a session of offense and then we flip it and start basically a full practice over where we're individuals and, you know, Skelly or, you know, 9-on-7, whatever it may be, and then team. And then Wednesday we try to get more into situations, you know, so it's a good hard practice, but it's, hey, we're in 2 minute drill. We're in red zone. We're in third downs. And then we flip to the other side and do somewhat of the same, depending on what we feel like we need for that week. Thursday, I think the best thing we do right now is Thursdays. We're able to practice before school starts even on Thursday morning. And so for us, I think that recovery is huge. You know, we're not on the field Thursday till 5 o'clock or 4:30. You know, we're able to get something out of that Thursday morning. And then if we need the meeting time, we take it Thursday afternoon. And then Friday, we're rolling. You know, a quick walkthrough in the morning and then pregame meal 3 hours before, you know, like we did at the college level, and then get ready to roll.
And then game time.
Yep, game time.
And then game time. But I want to ask you about a little bit more about last year's transition into this year. You knew you're going to have a talented squad. You turn your skill guys, D1 guys. Last year, the season ended against San Joaquin Memorial, where you guys were the hunted. It's a different mentality, and you know the disappointment of last year. But how did you guys roll last year as a staff and players, right, into this year? The growth movement that you guys had.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. You kind of take it for granted when you have these really elite players, and everyone's going to talk about that group that, you know, so explosive and all the offers and how good they are. And I agree with all of that. But that's not our team, right? And our team this year was, you know, it's a group of young guys that hasn't done it before, you know, and the engine of our team, I tell them all the time, is our O-line and our D-line. And some of them are returners and some of them are learning and figuring it out. And they're playing their first games at certain positions. So, really, it's been just developing that and making sure that the elite guys are working in the right way so that those young guys come along with them and elite guys don't just show up and play, right? They put in the preparation and they work the right way so that those young guys follow them and they see the way it's done. And then, okay, so Friday night you made all those plays. Why? Not just because you're a great player. And sometimes I think that gets lost in our kids. So that's a battle, you know, and how do we develop these young guys? How do we get our old elite guys to do it the right way consistently and not just show up and play?
And I know the track is going to be loaded and you're going to need your guys at full strength and all on the same page. And what, you know, I couldn't predict, right, from my perspective, from the media perspective. I could not predict who's going to win how many games on the track. It's extremely, extremely balanced. As a defensive-minded coach, what are the types of systems and programs that you have to coach against, you have to scheme for that, you know, keeps you up a little bit more at night? Like those ground-and-pound running games are like, oh, man, these games, we're going to have to grind it out. Or the air attacks are like, oh, we're going to have to do cover two on this. When we see this formation, we're going to have to slide over. I mean, I don't know. Like from your perspective, what is like, oh, these guys are going to give me fits?
Honestly, it comes down to players when it's all said and done. And you can scheme forever. And, you know, there's schemes that we have to adjust to. And when it comes to coaching, it's, you know, a lot of people say who has the pen last is the one that's going to win that play, right? So if we're drawing on a board and you draw up I Pro Power and I take the pen and I draw up how I'm going to stop it, I'm probably going to stop it on the board, right? But it comes down to those players. And if I draw up a defense and say we're going to blitz from this side, well, you could probably draw how to adjust to that and get a guy open, but it comes down to the player. You still got to block Titus Kajabi, right, on that blitz. And you still got to get the ball out before he gets to your quarterback. And same thing on offense. You still got to cover Marshall Sanders and Landon Wright and JD and JoJo and tight, you know. still got to do those
things. Got to count for those guys.
Yeah, and the scheme is the scheme. But, you know, that's a long answer to your answer question.
No, it's something we could probably explore for a lot. You know, what's the saying? You can't have the X's and O's without the Jimmy and Joes, right? You got to have players.
It's about the Jimmys and Joes for sure. And we're fortunate. We got a lot of really good players. I think as you talk about depth of a team, you know, the more that people are pounding the ball and trying to keep the ball away from our offense, that, you know, those are the games that are going to be tight ones.
Talking with Eric Brown, head coach at Clovis West. All right, let's talk. I love getting together with you, talking about the old days a little bit and time with Coach Hill. And you spent how many years coaching college? Was it 13? 10?
So 10 years as an actual assistant coach. I was a graduate assistant, student assistant before that. So 13 years around it, 10 years as an assistant coach.
So as a player and now as a coach and then seeing dudes on film, like, who is, like, the best high school player that you've seen? Like, a dude that stands out. Like, that's going to be an NFL guy.
Yeah.
Is there a guy?
I know. It's a hard question because I'm so biased sometimes on guys that I thought were really good players and then I got them. You know, like, we go back to my days at Idaho. There's a safety, barely played defense, and he's an option quarterback. His dad had a huge legacy in the NFL. Luther Ellis was his dad, a defensive lineman. And young Caden Ellis was the kid. And he's about $175 playing quarterback. And our coaches saw something in him. And when I met him, I saw something in him. I saw him as a outside linebacker, kind of what Titus is for us. You know, a guy that can get after the quarterback, a guy that can go play in space. And I pitched that to him and his dad. His dad looked at me like I was crazy. Luther, who's a great friend of mine now, but he looked at me like I was crazy. We ended up gray shirting the kid so that he can gain a little weight. And he started 4 years at Idaho, ended up drafted by the Saints, and now signed a 2-year, $23 million contract as a linebacker with the Falcons. So, not that that's the most elite player I've ever seen, but you know, those are the ones that stick out in my mind. The guys that I was able, fortunate enough to coach afterwards. And, you know, obviously at the level that I coached at, I would say Devontae Adams, his film was unbelievable as a high school player. And then you watch him play basketball, you could tell he's a real guy. But, yeah, there's probably too many to even start.
Well, and, you know, your experience as a player at West and then at the college level playing at State. And how about like the hardest hit you've ever seen in college? Was there just one where just Kajabi? I mean, Kajabi last night had one of those hits where you hear it in the crowd. You go, ooh, right? You just an initial reaction. What do you got?
So I got two. I got last night's hit reminded me of a hit that I show the D-line very often. But it was Jadavian Clowney on his, you know, he took an inside move and they ran inside zone kind of right into him. And if you remember, he just destroyed the running back in the backfield. But I always say that that's kind of that was the football gods on that play, because the play before that was a fourth and one that they felt like they got the stop. And if you look at the spot that the refs gave him, it really was a stop. And Clowney said, okay, you're not going to give us a ball back, then I'm going to go take it. And so he met the guy in the backfield and knocked him out, basically took the ball, and, you know, they ended up winning the game. The next one is, you know, Fresno State fans will probably remember this one, but Marcus Riley on the sideline against Hawaii. I was playing in that game. You know, I was mostly a special teams player, but I'm standing on the sideline, and it's basically right in front of me where – I think it was Cole Brennan scrambled to the sideline, and Marcus was dropping in coverage and pulled the trigger and, you know, ran inside out and hit him on the sideline. And, you know,
I felt it.
I was 5 feet away and I felt it. But, yeah, those are the two that stick out in my mind.
That's awesome. All right, Coach, we have to wrap everything up. Love talking with you, and I know your history with Pat Hill and your father, Dan, and just the amazing stories. We'll We'll be sure to chop it up some more. I always love talking to you. Good luck the rest of the year. Great win last night.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I'm always willing to come on and talk to you. I appreciate you, Paul.
All right, sounds good. Thank you to Lee's Air Plumbing and Heating, First Street Sports, as always, Jorge Rodriguez, Gabe Camarillo, Gerald Perucci of Shafter, Ty Miller, Harold Duvall of Clovis East, and Eric Brown of Clovis West. You've been listening to Central Valley Sports Report on 1430 ESPN. Have a great Labor Day weekend, everybody, and we'll talk to you next week.